You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Hey, this is Jay Baer from Convince and Convert, author of the new book, Hug Your Haters. And one of the best ways to get your hands on this book and to see me speak is to register right now for Social Brand Forum 2016. Join me, Jenny Diedrich, Joe Palizzi, and more in Iowa City this fall. Register now at socialbrandforum.com.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? Today's guest is John Michael Morgan. John has been called the Chuck Norris of both branding and leadership, and is known for his high energy and passion when teaching proven strategies designed to help achievers reach their goals. John is the founder of the Achievers Alliance, a personal development coaching program designed to equip leaders and entrepreneurs with the tools they need to achieve success. He has served as a private consultant and mentor to best-selling authors, Fortune 500 companies, small business owners, entrepreneurs, celebrities, churches, and some of the world's largest brands and high achievers. He is the best-selling author of Brand Against the Machine, which spent 9 months atop Amazon's top-rated marketing books list and has been labeled the new definition of branding. John is an in-demand public speaker on the topics of leadership, achievement, and marketing. He has spoke across the world at business conferences, associations and organizations, as well as churches and universities. And this week, he joins us on the On Brand podcast. John, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. It is a pleasure to be here. As always, I enjoy talking to you about all things branding and marketing and business and whatever else we talk about.
All of the things. You know, back when I first met you, you were just only the Chuck Norris of branding, and now also leadership.
Well, you can say you knew me when.
You've scaled your Norris.
Yeah, you know,
Norrisosity.
It's an interesting thing, and I will relate this to branding really quick so that it's extremely relevant for the listeners. I've been doing this a long time now. I don't feel that I'm that old of a person, but I've been doing this like 13 years. And so that seems like an eternity to me. But what's interesting is inevitably when someone calls me, you know, initially they're saying they need branding or marketing help, you know, something, you know, sales related, things like that. Okay, great. I go in there. Inevitably, what was happening is I would go in and I'd realize that their mindset was screwed up and their habits and their behaviors were never going to make them a success. And so what happened, Nick, is I would be sitting there thinking, I could give them every great strategy in the world, but they're going to sabotage themselves and they're going to screw it up because all the other things aren't right. Yeah. You know, and so I was kind of like having to do this, you know, other work before I could even get to, you know, the marketing or the branding and those things. And so what ended up happening is through a whole different series of events, which we can talk about later if you want, or we can skip it. I started talking more and more openly about leadership and the way that I talk about it. And it was the kind of stuff that normally had been reserved for clients. And everybody went nuts loving it. So I call all my clients and I'm like, hey, listen, I'm going through like a huge shift, dramatic change. And every one of them is like, okay, what? You know, kind of nervous. And I'm like, I'm not going to talk to you about branding anymore. I'm going to talk to you about achievement and leadership and, you know, all this stuff. And every single client I had said, how is that any different? And I'm like, great. So the branding guy has his brand wrong. You know, that's not even how they were looking at me. And so, yeah, so it's kind of, you know, transition. And I do, of course, still help with both. But yeah, you know, it's like I said, it's one of those things where when you want to help people, a customer or a client may have come to you for, you know, to solve problem X, but then they also need help, you know, solving Y and Z.
Well, you know, that was actually, Chuck Norris jokes aside, that was, you know, as I was kind of thinking about talking with you and thinking about this transition, It sort of seems, and even all the way, you know, back in Brand Against the Machine, it seems like there's a lot of talk about developing a brand with purpose, and mm-hmm. that's an important part of what feeds, you know, the plan, the system, everything that you kind of build onto that becomes your brand realized. But I think at a personal level, that same sort of construct applies too. I mean, is there a common thread there between branding and leadership that you can think of?
I do, because as you know, I really specifically, even though I've helped a lot of big corporate brands, I think of branding as being far more personal than that. You know, I don't think of it as a logo and, you know, all of these things. That's a part of it, of course, but you know, I look at it as every single person out there has a brand because we all have a reputation, you know, good or bad. We've all, you know, got that. Everybody that's ever come in contact with us or ever done business with us has some type of opinion of us, even if the opinion is neutral, right? And so there becomes this responsibility there. And so if you take branding and think of it as your reputation, and then you think responsibility, to me, the next logical word then is leadership. Right. Like, let's take responsibility and be the leader of your entire life, not just your business, but at home and, you know, with your friends and, you know, family and your community and, you know, all those things, which ties into what you're talking about, which is, you know, your purpose. Right. Like, why are you doing this? Obviously, to make money. We all want to make money. That's wonderful. And of course, we want to help people. But there's still something bigger than that. You know, there's still like, what do you actually want to do? So what I had, Nick, here, I'll share this with you, because I think this will be maybe somewhat interesting to the listeners, maybe not. But I had this moment when I was going to write the second book, and it was going to be called Till Death Do Us Part, How to Create Customers for Life. And as I'm writing this book and I'm thinking that the content's good, the whole time, like with every letter on my keyboard that's pressed, I have in my mind, oh, God, I don't want to talk about this. Right? You know, I'm just typing along and I'm thinking, 2 years from now, I don't want to be on stage talking about this. And, you know, 5 years from now, I don't want to be on stage talking about this. And so as I was going through it, I kept thinking, but that's the next logical step, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's, you know, the logical progression here. And so I thought, okay, my third book will be about leadership and achievement. And let me get this one out of the way. And a client who's also a friend of mine and someone I greatly respect, we had dinner one night and he was talking about it. And he said, listen, if you died, do you want your kids to have a book about customer retention or a book about achieving the life they want? Yeah. And so I'm like, well, crap. Okay. So I scratched the other book, you know, kind of moved in. You know, again, what to some people may look like a shift in direction, but it is all still tied together, because how we lead determines our brand. How many great brands have you come across that so much is there that's good, but because the leadership behind the scenes is a mess, the brand falls apart?
Well, and, you know, so many, I mean, there's also nothing that there's no other factor for a great brand that can have the impact that a great leader can.
Right.
Especially
that's
larger
right.
organizations too.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it starts, you know, think about you and I, you know, we'll tell, you know, these businesses out there that, you know, their service, their employees and all that are part of the brand, right? It's all an experience. Well, imagine then if the leadership is bad from, you know, top to bottom, then how are any employees delivering a great brand experience for somebody? You know, it's not. And so I think about, I know we've pointed to Disney probably in the past, and it's easy brand for, you know, to point to and say that they're doing a lot right. But as a lot of people have probably heard, they allow in their theme parks the employees who are the custodians going around and, you know, picking up trash and things like that. Those people know where every single attraction is, that they're equipped to answer any question. They're encouraged to do that. What that is that's the leadership at the top making the people seemingly at the bottom leaders as well. And when that happens, look at what changes in the brand experience.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, and the other end, the Disney end, with everybody being empowered too, that starts at the top but goes all the way down. And like you said, is a huge determinant in everything.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think a lot of businesses, specifically small businesses, think in those terms. right? You know, my dad's a small business owner, and while, you know, he's got some, you know, good characteristics in terms of leadership, some of his weaker ones are he looks at it as, you know, I'm up here and then, you know, down here they are. And not that they're beneath him, but he categorizes it all in like these departments.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and it's like if you'd give some of these people the training and freedom to lead in their own right, how does that change the customer experience, which then, of course, changes the brand? And so it's an interesting dynamic of, you know, how that goes through. But I think a lot of times people are afraid of it because they still don't grasp that concept of everything we do is branding. You know, how we dress, how we answer the phone, you know, everything we do is branding, which means our employees are the front line of that brand because they're the ones interacting with the customer to begin with. So they've actually got the biggest influence on that experience, yet we don't equip them to lead in their own way.
Well, it's interesting too, I couldn't agree more that everything's branding. I think sometimes that is a daunting thing for businesses of all shapes and sizes to kind of get their arms around. You know, it's almost like kind of that paralysis of where do I even start? So, I mean, in response to, okay, so everything's branding. So what do I do about it? Is there an easy way to get their arms around it, or at least a first step to kind of walk towards that eventual goal?
Yeah, you know what? I think the good thing to do is to kind of step out of your business for a little bit. We're all so close to it. It's hard to, you know, see what's going on in our own company. But you take a step out for a moment and put yourself in the customer's shoes and go through the entire process. And I mean, like, from prospect to, you know, final sale, like, come through and, you know, look at your advertising, you know, opt into your email list, walk into your store, you know, call. You know, are they pleasant when they answer the phone? Like, these guys go through all the processes and experiences that a client has and then ask yourself, was any of that worth talking about? You know, good or bad, right? Because then you can at least identify, here's where to start. You know, maybe a lot of it's just really average, and that's okay. You don't need to focus on the average ones right then. You need to focus on the ones that obviously fall short. So that's a good place for somebody to start. In addition to that, I think the step number one is exactly what you alluded to, which is don't panic. You know, yes, everything you do is branding, but that can absolutely be a wonderful thing and not this let me second guess every step I'm taking kind of situation, because that's not how you build a great brand.
Well, I also like the idea of, you know, when I talk about a similar approach, I always call it the Atticus Finch school of marketing in, you know, walking a mile in your customer's shoes. But I like, instead of just auditing things, I like that the lens that you kind of looked at what you would observe after the fact was any of this worth talking about? Because it seems like that is kind of the difference on the scoreboard between something that, oh, that happened, and that is something that is unique about that brand experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's exactly right. And I think that we often think that what we sell is the product or the service, and all we focus on in business is getting the customer and then, you know, the end result for the customer. And we don't stop and think that we're actually selling, you know, the in-between there, right? So what I mean by that is if someone walks into your store and buys your product, they also bought the experience of going into your store, and whether that was good or bad, or again, you know, service. I knew a guy recently who said that he had just had his website redesigned and it was, you know, this big deal. And I was like, man, do you like it? And he said, oh, I love it. Getting to the final result was the worst experience of my life. And I thought, you know, here's a guy who the company exceeded expectations in terms of the final result, but because the process was so bad, they're not getting any referrals.
Yeah.
Right? You know, they made it so difficult. And that's the challenge for all of us. In service-based businesses, maybe it's a little easier because you have some more interaction there. But for the rest of us, you've got to stop and think, okay, wait a minute. How do I make this experience, you know, pleasant? And that starts, you know, like I said, you know, on the most basic level of, you know, there's a restaurant in town that's really good and their parking lot is horrible and everyone complains about how hard it is to park. And I can pretty much guarantee you in a few months, they'll be out of business. And it doesn't matter that the restaurant's nice and good price and great food and all that. It's hard to get there. And so they're not going to.
Yeah, it is interesting because, you know, I thought of that. This is the dorkiest thing. But as we're recording this, my wife appeared outside my home office window and held up this package of clothing that I ordered after a painstaking 90 minutes on the Express website and then on the phone trying to get a gift card processed. And at so many points along the way, I thought, why am I not bailing? You talk about that, and I feel like the investment for whatever reason, but it's like I was close. I wanted to bail, but I still liked what I was getting, like just enough. It's like this weird kind of emotional calculus that I think we all run that your parking lot made me think of.
Well, so let's take that example because I'm sure there's listeners thinking, yeah, you know what? Nick's right. Like there are companies that the experience isn't that great, but I keep going back to. But you were in the danger zone for that company, meaning if at any time now, Nick, let's say in the next, you know, 3 months, a better option comes in, they're going to absolutely blow you away. And there it can even just be like 1% better.
Yeah.
Because you've got that comparison to. So customers may be sticking with you for now, but it's temporary until they find the better option. So it's like if your process is like, you know, just painstaking and, you know, horrible, you know, but you feel like people keep coming back, that's only a matter of time.
Yeah. It's an interesting tangled web of emotions and connections that we have. I mean, ideally, it's the same kind of emotions that hook you and lead you to be brand loyal anyways, but it's definitely, I think there's those that don't understand it and think that that it's something that they can kind of just keep drawing against.
Right. And let's not be, you know, kind of shady here. Let's be very upfront and honest. You're very emotional about your clothes.
I am. It was really sad. It was at the end of a long day. And I thought, you know what? I got a coupon. I have a gift card. I'm going to go for some retail therapy here. And it went south fast.
As sometimes it does. I mean, it does. But, you know, you're exactly right. Like, I, you know, order way too much stuff off Amazon, and I've ordered stuff before, and the products never come. And I'm sitting there furious, but what other option do I have? Until a better alternative to Amazon comes along, I've got nothing. But here's the catch. If they continued to drop the ball, it opens the door for another alternative to come in.
Well,
right? I mean, so if they stay good, the competition stays away. But the moment, you know, they start slipping, which, you know, that's Richard Branson's whole business model with Virgin, is find the markets where people are slipping and then jump in.
Well, I was thinking here as we record this, it is on the eve of the return of House of Cards. And I think of Netflix, and it's like you take, you know, home video where, you know, built on penalizing people for being late. And they were vulnerable. And they built a brand around that.
Yeah. And, you know, there's, I'm glad you brought that up because an extra point to this all is we've got to stop making it so hard to do business with ourselves. Like, oh my goodness. Like you're saying, so, you know, Blockbuster and Hollywood Video and all them, you know, with the late fees and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And even just driving to get there, you know, imagine the horror making us leave the house. But Netflix came in, and not only did they solve the problems, what they did was they just made it easier.
Yeah.
You know, they made it easier for me to sit on the couch, be lazy, and say, I want to watch a movie.
Well, and it connects right back to the emotional stuff too, because some would say, oh, the people that would judge lazy Nick would also say you've made Nick happy because that's a thing he doesn't have to go do. And yes, that's a judgment that, you know, it could be interpreted in through a lazy lens, but it's also one that you've solved a problem for someone. Yeah, you've That's taken right. friction out.
Yes.
And I think that that is you know, back to purpose. That is not an unimportant purpose that that brands can have.
And you know what? Like, let's wrap up this part with Netflix is such a great example of everything you do is branding. Because think about it. The product didn't change. It's the same movies. Netflix didn't come out and say, we've got a better selection or a bigger selection or any of that. They just said, hey, you know, lazy people, you don't have to drive. Right? I mean, that was it. Like, the product is the same. It's still movies. You know, we're still, you know, the same, you know, type of stuff. You know, in fact, they offer less, you know, because Blockbuster had candy and popcorn and, you know, games and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, Netflix doesn't have those things. Okay, fine. But again, it's like, you know, they didn't have to reinvent the industry to change the industry. They didn't try to change the product. They simply said, let's change how we get it to them.
Well, and that's you know, back to the other example you brought up too of Amazon. I mean, you're not getting different things. You're just getting them differently.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah, I think that's why you talked about, you know, people getting caught up in the products they sell. And one of my favorite questions is from Denise Lee Yun, who in her book, What Great Brands Do, talks about, you know, asking yourself as a brand, what business are you really in? And I think that it would be easy to say Amazon, you know, is just in the sending you stuff things, or Zappos is just in the shoe business. And I think it's really a different animal than that. And it's a much more broad experience and emotional need that both are meeting.
Yeah, and I love that, and I love that book as well. And I think that, like, what I try to tell people, how do you achieve that? Get caught up in the people that you serve and not in the service that you sell.
That's good.
You know, when it's – that's tweetable right there.
I was going to say that. I'm writing that down.
but that's the thing, right? When you're focused on the people that you're trying to serve, they become priority number one. How you're serving them becomes priority number two. You know, so exactly what we're talking about, where it's the product isn't your brand. It should be, my brand is, these are the people that I'm so passionate about serving, and what are the different ways that I can serve them? And I know that it's like against, you know, marketers' rules to, you know, do one of these podcasts or speak on stage and use Apple as an example, but they used to only sell computers. Now they don't. Right. So this is what happens when you're caught up in the people that you serve and not in the stuff you sell, you know, because now, you know, if you ask someone to name, you know, an Apple product, probably 90% of the time their response is going to be iPhone.
Yeah.
Not, you know, a Mac. Right. I mean, truly. I mean, and we're all using, you know, the laptops and all that kind of stuff. But anyways, that's just kind of an example of that. If we focus on the people, the product becomes, you know, just, I don't want to say, you know, it's, you know, secondary in terms of your focus, but you don't get so caught up in thinking it's going to be, you know, this magic bullet. The people are your magic bullet.
Yeah.
You know, take care of them and you're going to make your money.
That's such a great focal point too, and kind of makes some of the talk that, you know, everybody talks about building tribes and all of these things, which are important. But I think in terms of how that work is actually done on a day-to-day basis, I think that is a great focus. What are some of the best ways for, you know, someone that is working at a brand, at a small business, big business out there that might be listening? If I'm fired up after hearing you say that, I've tweeted it, I've done all the prerequisite things, and I want to go get caught up with my people. Where's a place to start with that?
Well, if you've got existing customers, I think that's place number one, right? Is, you know, whether it's online or offline, let's not be afraid to have a conversation with people. It's amazing what happens when we just talk and listen. So that's the first thing. And then I think, again, you know, the next thing is, you know, figuring out this question, and I don't know that there's a right answer to it, but you've got to at some point decide, are you selling people what they want or what they need? And it's really interesting, and take like your business and my own, where, you know, basically we're teachers, right? Mm-hmm. And of course, the student needs to hear a lot of stuff and doesn't want to hear any of it, right? It's right. Like I tell people all the time that entrepreneurs all want advanced and they all need to master the basics. And that's why so few like have mega success, is because everyone's like, what's the next thing? I want that hidden tip. You know, what's that advanced, you know, super duper secret strategy? And it's like, oh no, it's just master all the basic stuff. You know, like that's, you know, that's the secret, you know, sauce. So anyways, I think that's the thing, is, okay, how do we get caught up in those people? Like you were saying before about purpose, such a powerful word. You know, figure out, okay, why do you want to help these people? What is it about them? What is it about their problem? What, you know, we get so of, oh, I got this solution, I can't wait to help. But do you really care, or you just think this is a money-making thing? You know, so again, even if you're selling something very simple, here, how's this for a unique, you know, market here? I don't know if you say niche or niche.
I think we've talked about this before. I have a little mental freak out right before I have to say one. I'm pretty sure I probably go 50-50 because I'm
You're afraid to commit.
That's I think I probably go niche.
You go the wrong way. Interesting.
Probably.
That's okay. You know what? That's all right. You could be wrong. So I talked to this guy, and his business is building and installing bathroom stalls. So when a new, you know, building is being built and they're going to have a public restroom and facility, he's putting up the partitions, right? And I'm asking him, how do you, like, as a kid, you know, when you want to be, you know, an astronaut and a fireman, do you end up making dividers between toilets, right? Like, and I wasn't trying to talk down to him, but I'm just thinking, like, who says I want to go do that? And his eyes lit up. He couldn't wait to talk about it. And he said, no, you don't understand. He said, when someone goes into, you know, a church, a school, you know, a restaurant, a store, anything like that, he said, one of the biggest things that they talk about is the bathroom. You know, was it nice? Was it clean? Was it big? All those things. And he said, I get to have an impact on their experience, and I'm not even selling anything in the store. And I thought, well, there you go. Right. Here's a guy who gets his purpose. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, he's finding, you know, his place within that. Does he sell something that is basically boring? Sure. But he's, you know, really passionate about helping it. The other thing is, you know, talking about people. I don't know why this is, but apparently in construction, one of the things that trip them up in building a new building is laying out the bathroom. And so part of his service is you can install it yourself, but he will hop on Skype and do video and show you exactly how to do it and walk you through it. Wow. You know, yeah. So he's helping them on, like, you know, that level as well. So again, here's a business that is absolutely boring and very unique, yet, you know, he cares about the people he's helping.
So in thinking about anyone that is, you know, creating bathroom stalls, small businesses, niche businesses.
I'm sure all of your listeners, you know, are creating bathroom stalls.
What if I was the branding podcast for people in that business?
I'd have two listeners.
Two listeners, yeah. Him and his competitor.
That's right.
And I'm sure there is. I'm sure that exists.
Probably so.
But in thinking of all of these things, you know, and looking, you know, and scanning your bio to talking about, you know, advising authors, Fortune 500 companies, small business owners, entrepreneurs, celebrities, churches, all of these things, I think sometimes we are so focused on how different all of these things are. And it's the consultant problem. There's always this pressure to, you should only work with these types of groups. I personally, my list is probably not even as diverse as yours, but I like that variety. Mm-hmm. And I think the common denominators between tackling branding at all of these kind of tell an even bigger story. Is there connective tissue in the work of branding across these different types of entities?
I think there absolutely is, and you bring up topic here that I'm extremely fired up about. So I'm probably going to go on a rant here for a minute. You know, first of all, the people who tell you you need to niche down are usually the people who aren't at all. Right. You know, like that's the thing that I noticed when I was really young and I was studying, I was learning this and everybody was like, no, you know, pick your market, be a big fish in a little pond and all this stuff. And I never wanted to do that because I have an ego. But I'm like, OK, is that a smart thing to do? And I looked around, I'm like, but everybody telling me that sells to everybody on the planet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I'm like, wait a minute. You know, like, how is that? This is the way my week looks. I help a lot of different types of people in different industries in different parts of the world, and I help them all with the same thing. I'm having the same conversation with different people, basically. You know, does it change here and there? Well, of course it does. But for the most part, you know, they're all screwed up in the same areas, right? You know, that's the thing. And so I'm basically helping them, you know, with the same things. But my day is interesting because of exactly what you're talking about. It's interesting because, you know, this morning I've talked to an entrepreneur who lives in Thailand. And then I've talked to a guy who lives in Dubai, and then a lady in London, and then two people who live like, you know, 10 miles from me, maybe less, right? Like you see what I'm saying? Like all, and every single one of me, we're talking, you know, from, you know, pastors to pest control owners to, you know, SEO experts to, you know, Google's accountant is a client of mine. So it's like, you know, all over the place. I love that because it keeps it fresh for me and it keeps it exciting. And I'm not just, you know, going, you know, crazy with the same thing over and over and over. So even though I'm basically helping them with the same fundamental things, it's still interesting to me because I'm listening to different accents all day and different cultures and different industries. And, you know, that's fun. That's challenging.
Well, and I do think that somehow it makes my vantage point better because it seems like it happens all the time that you see something that applies to, you know, when you're talking with someone in a Fortune 500 organization and you see a small business have the same version or the same problem, just a mm-hmm. slightly magnified or different version of it. But it's the same root.
What you're exactly right, and what you're talking about, you're hitting on. So for anyone listening to this, if you do or want to do any type of coaching and consulting, pay close attention to what Nick just said, because here's the thing that I don't think people understand. I run a group coaching program. So it's for, you know, entrepreneurs, leaders, you know, anybody in that kind of field. And it's, you know, a group thing, people from all over the world, and I can scale it, right? It doesn't matter if I have one person or, you know, 100,000. It's the same amount of work for me, right? So really easy to put people in there and build that community and all those things. I still do a good amount of one-on-one consulting with people. And so many times, Nick, our friends, like, you know, our peers in the industry, people you and I both know really well, who are smart, will come to me and say, why do all the one-on-one stuff? Don't trade your time for money. Like, just keep growing, you know, the group coaching. But what they don't understand is that one-on-one stuff keeps me sharp. Yeah. You know, I've got my finger on the pulse of what is happening with entrepreneurs right now. And I would never trade that for anything, because it's doing that that allows me great content for books and speaking and blog posts and social media and all those things, because I'm in it. You know, I'm sitting there and, you know, last week I hop on the phone with someone, client of mine for 9 years. I say, what's new? Their spouse had just left them. And now they're crying and we're going through that. It's like, you know what? Like, I know what the real issues people are dealing with, you know, and they're saying, how do I build my business if it's just going to be me, you know, and still take care of the kids and still, you know, and it's like, all right, let's roll up our sleeves and get to work. When I hear a call like that and then I see someone on Facebook go, I know you like to read, but I don't have time to read. Screw you, dude. You know, like, what do you, you know, there's people out here with real problems.
Yeah.
No kidding. I don't know. I'm getting fired up. You're going to make me throw my microphone.
Don't do that. Don't do that. Because then we would miss out on the brand, as we wrap up, that has made you smile recently. You said you had one. You got it all queued up.
I do. There is a wonderful – well, first of all, let me ask you. Have you seen or paid attention to these companies that sell these boxes, but it's a subscription service, so every month – a new box gets delivered of whatever it is they sell.
Like BarkBox for dogs, right?
Basically, yeah. So I'm a subscriber of a few of them. One that is the one I'm picking right now is called BattleBox. And it's all this survival and tactical gear. So I get like, you know, lighters that are waterproof and camping equipment and compasses and knives and all this stuff that I'm for some reason into, even though I'd love to never leave the house at all. Like, you know, everything, you know, that kind of stuff. But I love getting this stuff. And so it comes and, you know, it's like Christmas every time you get it, right? And so it just came yesterday, sitting here in my box or sitting here, the box is on my desk, and, you know, it's just absolutely full of stuff. Stuff, by the way, I probably will never have to use unless the world ends. But, you know, and even then I wouldn't know how to use the stuff. So I'd just be sitting there crying with my box in my lap, you know. Just, that's my strategy plan for when everything falls apart. But I love it because it is truly like when you add up everything that's in the box and then you look at what you pay, you know, it's insane value there. And it's stuff that I wouldn't go out and just buy myself, but it's stuff that I think is cool. And so I love it. It's you know what? It's what you said earlier about, you know, the clothes. Sometimes you got to do something that sort of makes you feel good. I always forget what day the box is supposed to be coming. So when it comes, it's like this, you know, Christmas surprise of, you know, oh, another gift, you know, this is great. And like I said, it's just something kind of nerdy maybe that I like, but I love it.
Well, that is that's great. It's like Stitch Fix for survival gear.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And a friend of mine, he runs one called Faith Box, and I love them too. It's all these like faith-based products and things like that. But I love these kind of things because, you know, I pay for it, I forget about it, and then, you know, boom, when the box shows up, like I said, it's a gift. And who doesn't love receiving gifts? I mean, gifts are my love language, you know, like this is, you know, the way to make me happy.
Well, you heard it here. When the zombie apocalypse comes, we're all going to hightail it over John Michael Morgan's
place. I was going to say, somebody show me how to use this stuff. I'll be the one sitting there crying with empty boxes just laying around me.
Oh, John Michael Morgan, where can people go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
They can go to the newly redesigned.
I saw that. It looks great.
.com website.
JohnMichaelMorgan.com. I interrupted. I stepped on your plug. So I
will
say it.
You know what? Step on it whenever you want. That's fine. You know me. I come on this stuff anytime. I don't have to do a plug.
No, but it does. I had been to your website to grab your bio here for this, and it looks great. So head on over to johnmichaelmorgan.com. John, thanks for joining us on Brand.
Thank you for having me.
And before we go, I always like to flip the microphone around to our community, give a quick shout out. This week, I'm going off script just a little bit, not focusing on the online community. I want to give a shout, speaking of being a teacher, to my MBA Strategic Brand Positioning class that just wrapped up here at the University of Iowa. Great group of students. Talking about, you know, are you selling what people need? And like you said, sometimes when you're teaching, you aren't. And I feel like with this group, they seem to really want and care about this. So it's a great group, and I hope we can all stay connected. And a reminder, if you heard something that you liked on this episode or another, or if you have a question you'd like one of our guests to answer, let me know on Twitter using the hashtag OnBrandPodcast, and you may just hear your thoughts right here on the show. Last but not least, you can find links to everything that we talked about over at branddrivendigital.com. You can subscribe to the show via iTunes, Stitcher, and RSS. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over there and give us a quick rating and review. Help others find the show. And finally, a reminder that On Brand is brought to you by the Social Brand Forum, which John Michael Morgan spoke at in its inaugural year. The premier digital marketing experience takes place September 22nd through the 23rd in beautiful Iowa City, Iowa. Learn from experts like Jay Baer, Joe Polizzi, and Ginny Dietrich in the heart of the heartland. Listeners of the show get the best rate when they register using promo code ONBRAND at socialbrandforum.com. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.